Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. The Davis Mills, Houston Texans quarterback, about to make his second start this season, doing it against a very good defense. We'll talk to a Bills beat writer a little bit later on to talk to us about how good Buffalo's been. I'm worried about the kid, though, Davis Mills, and being joined now by Stanford Steve. You can see him on SportsCenter all the time with Van Pelt, also host of the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. Stanford Steve, we were just talking about our very own Stanford Davis Mills. How much do you know of the guy? Do you like the guy as an NFL quarterback?
Well, last year I was planning on Davis Mills being back at Stanford, but he went out and balled out, and I still think back to last year's Oregon game where he had a false positive COVID test, which forced him not to be able to play in that game. And I honestly believe if he plays in that game, Stanford beats Oregon, and Stanford has a chance to win the Pac-12. I think really highly of him. Obviously, a tough situation, and what he's in Houston, you know, kind of being thrown to the wolves with all you guys. With all that you guys have going on down there, but I love his poise. He's seen a lot. He didn't really, you know, he's seen a lot last year in circumstances. They obviously played all those road games, so they were up against it in that context. But you know, it's a big spot. He didn't play a lot of football. You know, he battled injuries. He was a huge recruit. But last year when he got the ball, man, he made the most of it, and I was totally impressed with him. Really happy for him with the opportunity he has.
Steve, when you look at it, it's not just about Davis Mills. You kind of chuckled a little bit in what we got going on down here, and I'm interested from a national perspective as you look at this Texans franchise, what Bill O'Brien did, what he left behind, the head coach, the first-time general manager, the trade of DeAndre Hopkins. Basically, we get the perception that everybody thinks they're the laughing stock of the NFL. What do you see when you look at this franchise in terms of where it's at and where it's going?
It's tough, man. You know, a lot of that stuff where you hear about the negativity around the organization is a lot of stuff that's going on behind closed doors. So, you know, now in the world of, you know, we have sources here and sources there, it's really, really hard to believe somebody. It's not hard to get news out there, you know. Everybody wants to be first with their news. That doesn't make sure, you know, that doesn't ensure that, you know, you're right with your news, you know, with social media and all that stuff. So, it's a real, real tough dynamic, and I'm sure those guys are really happy to get some football going and get on the field and try and prove themselves in that way, because obviously what helps a lot is the ability to win some games, and we thought they had that chance week one, and they got it, and I don't think, you know, you got to try and build from that, you know, first-year head coach, but, you know, going up to Buffalo in this scenario is not the best kind of way to find some positivity around organization the way Buffalo's playing, that's for sure.
The one and only Stanford Steve joining the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. And you bring up the, you know, everybody wants to be first in the media. And this is something we kick around almost daily, and Joel's getting tired of it, is the Deshaun Watson factor and the fatigue that everybody has in the city about Deshaun Watson. Yet, you get, you know, Jay Glazer on the Sunday kickoff shows on Fox talking about how there's a new trade rumor. Mike Florio talks about it every single day as well. In your opinion, is there a team in the NFL that would trade for a guy with 22 civil cases pending and the possibility of criminal charges being filed at the drop of a hat?
I don't see how, especially with the price tag, you know, they're asking for. So I don't see that scenario. With so much unknown, and you mentioned the numbers and cases against them. So you talk about tough dynamics. That's number one at the top of the list for sure.
All right, Steve, let me make it a little easier for you, because you know what? First of all, I'm tired as all get out of talking about Deshaun Watson. And also, I'm intrigued. Everybody knows you from being with SVP. I want to know how it came to that point. Like, I know you know your college football. I know and follow you in terms of from the wager world. But how did it all come about where – was it the relationship with Scott Van Pelt first? Was it the fact that you guys became friends because you had this opportunity? How did it all evolve into getting you to be basically Ed McMahon to Johnny Carson in nighttime sports TV?
Well, it goes back a while. I'd say over 10 years ago, I was the producer of the College Game Day radio show at ESPN Radio, and Ryan Russillo was my host.
Yep.
And Ryan and I you know, I spent more time with Ryan on the road every week traveling for game day than I did with my family. We knew our ins and outs, and I'm, you know, Ryan would still do the show Monday through Friday with Scott. So, you know, on Mondays, I would get out of the weekly college game day meeting and go over to their studio, and, you know, he and Scott were prepping for their show, and, you know, we developed a friendship there of, you know, I always said, you know, that dynamic with SCP and Russillo, we're different. You know, we weren't really in the hot take business where, you know, we read a headline and we spouted off about it. We were game watchers, man. We still are. We pride ourselves on that and watching the games and giving an honest opinion from watching the games. And I think that togetherness formed a really good friendship between the three of us. And I ended up taking over producing the SCP and Russillo show. And then, you know, TV came to Scott with this dynamic, and he said, I want you to come with me. I got this, you know, idea, whether it's the bad beats or the where in the world is an SVP. And it's all to Scott's credit. He said he was going to do it as far as bad beats and getting that gambling world out there and showing the people what we wanted to do. And, you know, I took the opportunity with him and haven't looked back since.
That's awesome, man. That wasn't your cabin, right, then, when you were traveling with Russillo?
No.
Just kidding, man.
Stanford Steve is our guest on the HRMP guest line. And look, to be a game watcher, to start the segment there, the bad beach, you have to be somebody that's willing to throw down some wagers, too. Whenever you're starting to take a look at some of those bets at the beginning of each and every week, what are a couple of things that you look for? What's your way of going about it?
I always try and look at the situation of what lines up for that game, whether it's a Friday night, a Saturday, you know, even a Sunday NFL-wise. I think there's a lot to tell from what a team did the week prior, possibly what's at stake the week ahead of them, you know, what they've played like at home. I look at a scenario in college football now where we're still seeing it, and I think it's a major factor. There's three top 12 teams in the country this week that are going on the road for the first time in front of fans in, say, 2 years. And you talk about the youth and the overturn of these rosters nowadays, and Oklahoma, Arkansas, and Ole Miss are top 12 teams going on the road to play in front of hostile fans for the first time. I think that means something. It makes me, you know, second guess whether, you know, what the point spread is with that underdog. You know, look at Oklahoma. You know, have not been impressed at all. Lincoln Riley would be the first person to tell you. And here they go on the road in a conference game giving double digits to a team that's beat them two times in a row. I don't want any part of that game. I don't want to put any kind of money on that game. We're in a scenario that brings that with Oklahoma having and struggles and, you know, trying to meet those expectations that might be, you know, unrealistic, but that's the world we live in now. So it's just things like that, and the situation is the most important to me.
Steve, when you look at the landscape of college football this year, it's different than what we've seen in years past. There was pretty much a clear-cut top one, top four, and you could say the powers. Do you like the parity this year, that it's basically wide open and maybe Alabama is sitting above everybody else? Or do you prefer it when it's more clear-cut that we know definitively there's four or five teams that are going to be in the mix at the end?
I think it's really healthy for the sport to give other teams opportunity. You know, I look at Cincinnati, the team I looked at the beginning of the season, and I saw a road that possibly could happen. Now, what needs to happen? They still need some Power 5 teams to get knocked off that are undefeated, say Oregon, say Oklahoma, you know, like that. So I think it's good to keep interest from a national level. You know, you got Oregon team all the way up in the Pacific Northwest who has an unbelievable fan base. Mm-hmm. But, you know, last week they're on at 10:30 at night against Arizona, who's probably the worst team in the Pac-12, and they're struggling. It's a one-score game in the fourth quarter. People on the East Coast wake up the next morning. What the heck happened to Oregon? You know, here I am staying up watching the game and feeling like it's a letdown spot because, you know, they've seen Arizona on tape. There's not a lot to like there, and they think they're just going to roll over them. So it's the whole dynamic of college football. There's so much that goes into it with emotional levels and all that. So I love the idea that more teams have an opportunity this year. That's all I ask. That's why I think that the playoff needs to be expanded, because we need opportunity to keep this sport going, to keep it growing.
That's where I was going next. If you believe in what you're saying in parity, then you believe in expansion. How much is too much on expansion? Do you want 8 games? Do you want 12 games? Teams.
It doesn't matter. We got to have a road for other conferences. That's all I care about. If, I mean, shoot, if there's eight teams and there's three SEC, fine. They'll match it up where they can't play, you know, in the final. So I just think we need a more. I think the group of five deserves an opportunity. And I keep saying opportunity because that's there's not a possibility. It's the opportunity right there where it's black and white. Hey, you win your conference, you got a line in the bracket, you know. So it's that where I'm good with eight. I mean, I've heard with 12. I'd be good with six. I just think we need more to guarantee more opportunity for others.
Stanford Steve joining us on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Steve, is there a second favorite sport that you enjoy betting?
I really like my favorite pro sport is probably golf majors. Huh. Just growing and appreciating that sport as I get older. I love looking at those odds before, knowing what's at stake, who's won it before, who's had success at the course, and now in the world we live in with the updated odds, like after the cuts made, I love looking at those numbers and picking winners from there, and you know who's in striking distance, you know who's playing, you know later in the day, who they paired with. I really think golf has we saw it with the Ryder Cup, how big of a deal that was. So popularity wise, I think that's a growing thing there.
I got to ask you, Steve, on top of all that, I love the fact that you do you be you, and the fact that you're on TV, you still, your t-shirt game is off the charts, and you don't feel like you got to be the starchy, stiff guy on SportsCenter. How did that all come about?
It's kind of grown into something that I was not expecting. I when I was in college and playing at Stanford, you know, the number one place I hung out was the equipment room. I still talk to my equipment manager from back in the day, you know, every couple weeks checking in. It's just, I think those are the most loyal guys in the business. They've seen it all. And that's, you know, the first places I would go on college game day when I traveled, go to the equipment room, introduce myself. Hey, this is what we're doing. We're going to be out in this quad, you know, good places to eat. You know, get suggestions there, and then it just started growing. Hey, here's some t-shirts, here's this, here's that, and you know, you start developing these relationships. And with SB Spirit Rochelle, we used to do the helmets on the desk, so that turned into me sending it out to colleges, and you know, all the small schools love, you know, being shown on TV. So that's what it's grown into. It's grown from helmets to t-shirts to that, to putting somebody underneath the sport coat for to show appreciation, show some love, and you know, I know everybody's watching and just trying to say hi in a way that only I could with the opportunity I have.
Spoken from a true gear whore like myself, there is nothing wrong with getting as much gear as possible. And if it's free, I'll take three. I love it. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Stanford, thanks so much for making the time, talking to us today, and hope to catch up again down the road.
I appreciate it, guys. Good luck.
That was awesome. Stanford Steve, you can follow him on Twitter at StanfordSteve82. He's also the host of the podcast Stanford Steve and the Bear. I like to bet some – I like live betting some golf, not even the majors. Like the fourth round, you see like Brooks Koepka on a par five, just pipe it down the middle. You can get some pretty good value in that if you're expecting like an eagle, a possibility, a chance to overtake the lead. I'm with him on that. Live betting some golf, final round of a tournament. There's some money to be made there. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about Stanford Davis Mills in his second start and how he stacks up against the other rookies in the NFL. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
When it comes to sports betting, SportsMapBets.com is the site you need. From weekly betting guides to single game breakdowns of the point spread, money line, over under, and more, SportsMapBets has all the info you need to make the best play. SportsMapBets.com. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Davis Mills getting set for his second start in his NFL career, doing it against very good defenses. Came in the second half against Cleveland. He faced the top defense in Carolina. And now he's going to Buffalo to face the Bills Mafia and what is a very good defense in Buffalo. If you're a subscriber to the Football Outsiders DVOA stat, they have the second best defense in the entire NFL behind only the Carolina Panthers. And Stanford Davis Mills, though, if you stack him up with some of the quarterbacks, the rookie quarterbacks around the NFL, passer rating, he has the best rookie quarterback passer rating in the entire NFL. He's first, Mac Jones second, Trevor Lawrence third, Zach Wilson fourth, and Justin Fields fifth.
I want to remind you now.
Best passer?
You've already closed the book on Davis Mills.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be very good.
You basically have said a lot worse than that about him and having no future and never being a starter.
I don't say he doesn't have a start.
Like, I mean, outside of this opportunity, right? Okay. Well, I also don't need the hype train to start telling me he's the highest rated rookie quarterback.
Just read the information.
That would lead you to believe that, well, then he's better than Trevor Lawrence. No, he's not. He's not even close. So no matter how much Trevor Lawrence is struggling early in the season, I don't think there's a snowball chance in hell that anybody, if you do a redraft, because we know we like to do those things in the sports world too, in media. Hey, redrafting last year's NFL draft. How high does Davis Mills go in
first
place
overall?
Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence? Come on, let me hear from you. 713. All right.
Which kind of reminds me of something that Stanford Steve just said. That he said like they're game watchers. He and Rosillo, they're not hot take guys. Are we hot take guys or are we game watchers? 713-780 ESPN. 713-780-3776. I think we're more game watchers than hot take guys.
Yeah, but I want to say hot take. I think passionate take. I think that when we get agitated about something, we don't candy coat it.
Yeah, Dale, you've heard a lot of radio over the years. Are we more on the side of being game watchers or hot take guys? He's thinking.
Dale, are you there?
Thinking. He's thinking some more.
There are two of you.
Yes.
And Jeremy, you probably lean more to game watcher.
Okay.
I mean, Joel's not a giant hot take guy, but if I'm picking out of the two of you, Joel's definitely the guy who's going to pop off with something more.
Is it fair to say that it's more passion than it is hot take? I'm not trying to get clicks and likes. I'm going to tell you how I really feel.
That's up to you. You can define it the way you'd like. I'm just telling you, in this definition, you'd be more the hot take guy. And Jeremy's more the game watcher.
There you go. Hey, it's not bad. One of us. It's good to have variety between the two of us.
How would you rate the bench in that
You think I'm afraid of them?
No, I'm just curious.
One of them is a clown. That's John. Lance is the funny guy, but he's not the clown. John's just clownish, I guess. Lance is the more analytical guy, I would say.
Yeah.
And John's the more gut feel guy, I would say. Hot take and game watcher.
Lance is the white guy. People think he's funny.
I don't know what that means. Do you know what that means, Jim?
I have no idea what that means.
Come on.
How do you guys not know
Sir Mix-a-Lot?
Well, because...
My posse's on Broadway?
My time.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Mine, too. I wasn't around then. Anyways, Davis Mills playing the Buffalo Bills on Sunday.
Oh, you want to get back to that?
Riveting, riveting television.
I mean, he is the highest-ranked rookie quarterback right now.
Facts are fact. Game watcher. I mean, I'm just reading you the information.
He's not the hot take guy. You remember you said that, though.
He didn't say he was a great quarterback. He said
he's the one that wants to force-feed Deshaun Watson in one segment and then wants to talk about the highest-rated rookie quarterback being Davis Mills.
Men lie. Women lie. Numbers don't. That's all he's giving you, numbers.
Right. Their stats.
All of a sudden, you're Team Jeremy. What the hell's wrong with
you? I'm not on anyone's team. You just asked me a question. That's all.
I'm calling into your college football show.
Anyways, here's Davis
Mills.
You'd
be the one guy.
That's right.
Too deep each and every Saturday with Dell and Fred Davis. Here's Davis Mills. Actually, it's not Davis Mills. It's his head coach, David Culley, on the defense that Davis Mills will be seeing on Sunday.
But they can be very multiple, and they will pressure you. I know this on third down. I know we expect they're going to play man coverage every third down because that's what he's always done. They like blitzing five guys. I know with a rookie quarterback, I know he's not going to sit back and just let four guys, you know, rush the passer. I know he's going to add an extra guy just to see how he can handle it, and we'll be ready for that.
He meaning, of course, Leslie Frazier, the defensive coordinator for the Buffalo Bills, who have the second-best DVOA in all of the NFL. I'm worried. I've said this since Monday. I am worried about Davis Mills and Davis Mills' health on Sunday against this Buffalo Bills defense.
Yeah, but don't you think, on the flip side of what Culley said, if I'm Leslie Frazier, I'm going to start out seeing what I can do with four. If I can do something with four, then I can wreak even more havoc on the rookie quarterback by what I throw at him in terms of schemes in the secondary and in pass coverage, and I don't have to waste an extra down lineman or linebacker to try and get the job done. Because with the Texans' offensive line, though it has been improved and it's getting better and there's more cohesiveness as they play more games, I think that a defense as good as Buffalo with Leslie Frazier and in their meetings this week are thinking, we're going to start by seeing if we can get home with four, and if we can, this kid's going to face way more than he's ready for.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, too, is down in distance, but it wouldn't shock me if you see that early. And look, Cleveland put some really good pressure on Davis Mills in the second half, and they were rushing four pretty much the entire second half. They were doing it with stunts and confusing the offensive line and maybe confusing the rookie quarterback as well. Davis Mills talked to the media yesterday for the first time as the starting quarterback of the Houston Texans. I actually was pretty impressed with how he handled the room. Here was Mills talking about last week's offense and said he didn't think it was limited in his first start.
I don't think anything was really closed off in the first game, but I mean, whatever they're comfortable calling when I'm in there, I'm ready to roll with it.
I don't necessarily believe Davis Mills, but I expect more on his plate Sunday, which is why I'm kind of expecting a little bit of a drop-off. Like, it wouldn't shock me if next week, when we're looking at rookie quarterback ratings, if he's not the the top guy in the NFL.
Well, since you're a shock jock, then it will be one less thing that you could... You could hot take and throw out there for a segment. Look, I don't think that he would know if they were dummying it down for him because he didn't study the whole damn playbook. And in the meetings and otherwise, they're going to try and get as much confidence behind this kid as possible. So they're going to pump him up and fluff him and tell him he's the greatest and have him work on the plays that they know in the back of their mind are the ones they've seen him execute. And they're certainly not going to put into the game plan anything that they know he struggled with or doesn't execute the way they need him to because of the fact that they can't take too many chances. They can't take the same kind of chances that they would take with a Tyrod Taylor, let alone that guy that's trying to be traded. I think that when you look at that from that perspective, they need to keep all negativity out of this kid's mind. We were talking about it from the standpoint of Jake Myers. A young guy overthinks everything when trying to establish himself on the major league level. So a young guy like Davis Mills already has so much going through his head about, you know what, I had to come in the second half when I wasn't prepared for it because Tyrod got hurt. Now I've got a short week and I got to prepare for the number one defense. And he's got a ton of things going on in that grinder in his dome piece. The last thing they need to do is have any negativity or have him start running some plays in practice that he doesn't run well. That's why I don't take a hold a lot of stock in that either. They're going to absolutely handle him with kid gloves and just try and execute the plays that they know he has a chance to complete or execute on and get some positive yards out of it.
713-780-3776, 5554 guy saying, how many interceptions does Davis Mills throw? Look,
three.
I think he's going to throw – I don't think it's going to be like a high turnover game. I think he's going to throw at least one. I'm curious to see what those player props are for that game on Sunday. But to me, this is going to be more of a game where he's like 12 for 20 for like 111 yards and gets sacked seven times. Like, I see it going more that way than being like this tons of interception game. One thing that I did find funny yesterday in the Davis Mills press conference, talking about the athleticism of the rookie quarterback from Stanford.
I need to run. I think I can make plays on the edge and try not to take any hits, but pick up some yards when it's needed.
Why do you think they don't give you credit?
I mean, I don't know entirely. Just quarterbacks aren't always the most mobile, and I've always been deemed the like stereotypical pocket passer, but I think I'm more athletic than a lot of people give me credit for.
Last one.
4.65 I think the NFL Network might have put like a 4.58 on something. I don't know how realistic the times were, but I mean, time faster than some people might have.
Oh,
expected.
He knows.
Yeah.
He knows.
He corrected the general there. 4.58. It wasn't 4.6s. It was 4.58. Davis Mills is a burner. You got yourself a dual threat quarterback in Houston. We have a quarterback, Houston.
Dell behind the glass was making some indications as to the real reason that people question his athleticism.
He's a big white quarterback. I mean,
I don't know that he used big or quarterback.
Just because he...
Davis knew it. I watched the video, and he kind of had a smirk on his face.
He did.
He was like, well, I mean, then he defaulted to pocket passer, but he knew.
Does he sound like young Daryl Morey? If you play that soundbite again with your eyes closed thinking about that, he sounds like a young Daryl Morey.
I can see it a little bit.
And he went to Stanford.
Bias has just leaked through.
That's actual Daryl Morey.
I know. Now, play a little Davis Mills.
That was a little more squeaky.
On the edge, if I need to run, I think
it's
can.
Pretty close.
Right there, baby.
That's pretty
right
close.
Right there. Boom.
That's a
hot
game.
Take.
That's a game tomorrow. Is this Davis Mills or is this Daryl Morey? Maurice right. Jones-Drew, by the way, of NFL.com, he ranked the starting quarterbacks this week, 1 through 32. Only one guy worse than Justin Fields. It's Stanford Davis Mills. So balance it out there from the start of the segment to the end of the segment. When we return, this college football playoff, is it more wide open than ever before? Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-3776. If you're going to text, put a name on it.
Damn right.
7587. Jeremy's top notch, but how tall is he? He can barely see over the desk.
5'9". That's why you're baby. Little Mike Florio.
5'9", baby. Little Mike Florio.
In heels?
Depends on the shoes I'm wearing.
Didn't you get some of the Prince collection?
No, I can't pull off anything that Prince ever wore.
No?
Nah.
Not the heels?
Nah. Okay. Nah. Sometimes, though, if I wear my dress shoes, it adds an inch. So,
is that a play on words to say that you're top-notch, but how tall are you?
So, Alabama, Ole Miss, they play on Saturday.
Covered right over that one, huh?
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Lane Kiffin was on Feinbaum, our friend of the show, Paul Feinbaum. It feels like Lane Kiffin's in front of the show, too, as much love as we're giving that guy these last couple of days. Feinbaum asked him the question of, like, what pregame conversations are like before the game, because you always see him at midfield. They're shaking hands. They're talking for a couple of minutes. Here was Lane Kiffin with a little truth behind that.
They really are irrelevant. I mean, both people are ready for the game. It's really just some tradition that they have. And so you go out there and, you know, hey, he'll say welcome and, you know, talk about the weather or how's everything? You know, how's Miss Terry doing? That's about it.
How's Miss Terry doing? I hate small talk. You a small talk guy?
I mean,
I cannot stand
ask Dell to answer that question. I am, and you're not. I'm
I cannot
sure.
stand small talk.
You do radio for a living, and you can't stand small talk.
No, we talk about sports. I don't think that's small talk. Small talk's like, hey, how you been? Hey, what's going
the
on?
Spin off of family? Sports what's is that some like? People have small talk that they want to inject in the conversation.
I'm not a very good communicator, I'll be honest.
I couldn't agree more. I think that from neither. And by the way, if you want to talk about the guy who's not small talk guy, it's the guy behind the glass. There's no doubt. There is no talk.
I totally
there's
get
small
it.
Talk.
I get it.
Dell is a no talk guy.
I'd appreciate people not talking to me.
See?
And you know what? If they didn't talk to me, I'd think more highly of them.
Unless they're a cougar in your apartment complex. Then, hey, let's chat.
Still no talking.
Oh. It's the nonverbals. It's the body language. The language of love.
And it's the neighbor, not the apartment complex. It's the house next door.
Same difference.
Just look at that flex,
just,
by the way.
Just to add some context.
She's 79. She uses a walker.
No, not a walker. I'm not going to dispute the other thing. I don't know how old she is, actually.
Yeah, oh, great.
Just please don't talk to me is all I'm asking.
Yeah, I'm right there with Dell. I'm not a huge fan of the small talk. Like, if I was an opposing coach on these, like, in these little midfield conversations that they have, I could do without it. Like, I'd go up and be like, hey, how's it going? How good luck the rest of the way after today. But it wouldn't be something that I, you know, have that much interest in.
It's a made-for-TV moment more than anything else. Unless you have a,
it's like a courtesy.
Like an existing relationship with someone you used to work with. And you're truly, you know, our friends or whatever. Most of it is just made for TV. Like, here are the two coaches meeting on the field before the game.
Yeah. It's more like something you can use as B-roll, right?
It's not like, hey, by the way, first series, we're going to concentrate on establishing the run. Be ready.
Yeah. It's like, this is totally something that's for TV production. So they can use it as their little, mm-hmm. like, intro to the game. Or maybe it's a cut scene whenever they're coming back from break. That's really the biggest thing that you can take from it. Now, Lane Kiffin's actually going up against Saban. So it is somebody that he used to work for. It is somebody that he used to know. And as you heard him mention Mrs. Saban's wife there at the end there, too. What do you think that the relationship is with Nick Saban
no
and
chance.
Lane Kiffin? You don't think they're buds?
Lane loves Twitter. Lane has gone out on multiple occasions to take little pot shots at Alabama and working for Saban. You remember how it all ended when he missed the bus after the national championship game and, you know, he got left behind. And Saban's not I don't think there's any love lost between either guy. And honestly, if there is either way, Kiffin owes a ton to the fact that basically by working for Saban, as much as he might have hated it, as much as they might have clashed, working for Saban like it's doing for Bill O'Brien right now is resurrected his career so that in a few short years after doing that job that he always likes to lambaste as being so excruciating, he's the head coach of an SEC school. I mean, it worked out pretty good for him.
I would agree with that. And like Lane Kiffin, I think this is a good team too. I don't know what kind of chance that they have against Alabama. And I said this the other day, that if Matt Corral beats Alabama, then I want him to be the Texans quarterback. And there's actually like there's a madness to that method. There's a method to that madness. I have a long-standing theory when it comes to college quarterbacks and quarterback prospects that then transition to the NFL. I love quarterbacks who, one, have the talent to be a first-round draft pick. Let's put that, that's the biggest parameter right out of the gate. But on top of that, too, I like quarterbacks from Power 5 conferences, but not the elite Power 5 conferences. Like, I don't want a quarterback from Alabama most of the time, and these are all case by case. I don't want, you know, I don't want the quarterback playing with the very best college talent because that talent's going to make that quarterback look better. I want the quarterback that's playing in those leagues. It's the SEC, it's the Big Ten, it's the Pac-12, whatever the case may be, but they elevate the program to a different level. And a couple examples of this, like Eli Manning at Ole Miss, he took that program to a different level. You could say Peyton Manning did that at Tennessee if you want to go way back with it, although they won the national championship the year after he left. Jay Cutler at Vanderbilt.
Eli.
Yeah, I just said Eli. Thanks for listening.
You said Peyton Manning.
I said Eli, and then I said Peyton. Check the tapes. But you, Rivers, NC State. Like, this is a long theory that I've had. That's besides the point. But that's something that I believe in. I really believe in that. So whenever I say something that is hot takey, like if Matt Corral beats Alabama, I want him to be the Houston Texans quarterback. First and foremost, he is a first-round quarterback in the NFL. At what point? Who knows? I'm not sure the Texans are going to have the number one pick. Maybe he's somebody that falls to somewhere between the 5 to 7 range. And then also, if he can show that he can go to Bama and beat a team with so much talent, or if he can take Ole Miss to that next level, I'm not even saying like SEC champions, but if he has them like in the top 10, the top 15, that's somebody I have faith in.
Case Keenum,
greatest college football quarterback statistically of all time.
Greg Ward. Oh, never mind. He plays receiver.
Go Cougs. Caught a touchdown the other day, though.
Yeah. Okay, well, you know what?
But does that theory make some sense?
It does,
or
make
is that
some
just
sense.
Nuts?
Yeah, no,
7-1-3-7-8-0-3-7-7-6.
Because a lot of, look, and Tua, we still don't know. Mac Jones looks like he might be a difference maker in the NFL as opposed to all the other Alabama quarterbacks. And it goes even to, not so much the same way as Oklahoma, because you got two guys recently that not only won the Heisman in college, but also have succeeded on the next level when you start talking about Kyler Murray and you start talking about Baker. But before that, you could win the Heisman at one of the big-time schools in national college football prominence and have quarterbacks that win the Heisman. Danny Werfel, Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
You know, Greg, Greg McElroy, you know, at Alabama. The guy that won the Heisman at Oklahoma.
A.J. McCarron,
White.
Heupel, Josh White.
Yeah, I mean, all these guys. So there is a lot of credence to what you're saying. I think that, you know, a lot of the knock coming off on Alabama quarterbacks is exactly what you said. When you've got three all-world receivers that are going to be first-round draft picks in the NFL, when you've got, you know, a Derrick Henry to hand the ball off to, or a Najee Harris, or whoever the next running back is at Alabama that's going to win the Heisman or be a first-round pick, and you have, you know, two deep offensive linemen that are going to protect for you and block for you, it makes a difference.
One of the arguments that always gets pushed back at me whenever I give that little spill, because it's something that I've thought for a very long time, is that guy that played quarterback for the Texans for the last few years before this season,
he
went to Clemson, and you know, we won the national championship there, and he was, you know, he had a lot of really good talent around him. I would argue that he did take that program to the next level, though. Were they national champions before the guy who played quarterback at Clemson and won a national championship for them under Dabo, who Dabo calls the Michael Jordan of the NFL? So that's just a theory that I have, and that's why I am impressed with what I've
seen. Well,
and
there's also something
to
be said about what Trevor Lawrence was able to continue to do at Clemson to make the rest of the program look good, because now that he's gone, they thought they had the 5 stars. They thought they had another guy that could execute. But if you don't have a guy with the talent and the ability of the guy that you mentioned and Trevor Lawrence, you might not have a program that can be successful offensively, and that might say as much about the program and the offense as it does about whoever's trying to run it.
And not every theory is 100% right. Like, there's exceptions to every rule. Like, there's going to be a great Alabama quarterback that's playing with, you know, superior talent that plays well in the NFL. I mean, it goes, but it kind of, you know, you see that. You see exceptions to the rules all the time. So it's not like a bulletproof theory. It's just something I like to see for my quarterback prospects coming into the NFL. Flimsy on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, 713-780-3776 as well. He's asking, why did the Texans draft Davis Mills when they could probably be number one draft pick next year, or at least in the top five? I don't mind taking chances on quarterbacks because, to me, they have good return on investment. Like, even if you draft Davis Mills and, like, let's say he plays decently for the rest of the season, and then you draft a quarterback that you love in the first round next year, one, you either have a really good backup or you have a guy that might have some trade interest around the NFL. Plus, the quarterback position is so important. Take some shots. Take some, you know, ammunition at going after a quarterback.
You want depth. You want competition. As we just got done highlighting, there's no guarantees for about 90% of the quarterbacks taken in the NFL to guarantee that they're going to be the same kind of successful as they were in college in the pros. These days, it's not as easy to define. There's a reason why after RG3 was taken in the first round by the Washington football team now, that Kirk Cousins right after that, because of the fact that you just never know. You took Davis Mills also because of value, because from a perspective in the draft, you want value. You're always trying to get value picks, especially when you don't pick till the third round. So if you take a guy like a Justin Reed, who was supposed to be a first-round talent, you got him in the third round. Well, the same thing, and ironically, same school, but you take a guy that was, a lot of people said, if he hung around one more year at Stanford, and Stanford Steve said he had a lot of high hopes for him at Stanford, that a lot of people thought would have been a first-round pick next year, so you got him in the third round. So you got value, and you created competition. Whether you get another quarterback next year or the year after, you at least have guys now on your roster that you can at least put some stock in and try to develop.
Yeah, you can't ever have too many good quarterbacks because there's always a demand for good quarterbacks. So I have no problem taking
injuries
shots at
happen
QB.
Too.
Yeah, I have no problem taking shots at quarterback. Now, you want it to be somebody that you like, but no problem at all with that draft pick that Nick Caserio made. We'll get to some of your calls when we return. Also, Dusty Baker is pissing me off. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. Look, I didn't know what to expect when Doc wanted to meet with me. I had talked to Fred Fowler. I talked to John Granato. They could not have had higher marks and regards for what Doc Linville did for them. So I was open-minded when I sat down and had my consultation. And when Doc came in to me and said, look, I don't think that you need anything done per se, but if you want your old hairline back, if you don't want to have an 8-head anymore and you want to have a 4-head, actually that's my line, but he said, you know what, he felt like he could really help me. And so I was open-minded and optimistic as I learned more about the process. What I found out was it isn't a gimmick. It isn't that big zipper line that a lot of guys get in the back of their head that you've even seen athletes get as they try to resurrect their hair. It's your own hair. It's called the neograft procedure, and they take hair from where you have a ton of it on the back sides and three-quarters of the way for me, and they use it in places where you don't. It's like how you do sod when you're planting sod, only it's a much more technical process. They take the hair from areas you have a ton, and they put it where you need it, and the results are unbelievable. The success rate is fantastic. It's all your own hair. It's not fake. It's going to continue to develop. As you get into 6 months and 9 months after the procedure, you're going to tell that it's getting thicker, it's getting more lush, and you can do more things with it. And so I was excited, and now I can't be happier with where we are almost 2 weeks in. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com. You can get all the details. You can figure out how it all works, what you'd have to go through if you did it. And by the way, the other big thing is once you do that, you can set up a free consultation for ESPN listeners. It's normally going to cost you $150 to meet with Doc Linville and his staff. Because you listen to us, you get that consultation for free. So what do you have to lose? You go in, you meet, you get all the details on the neograft. You find out that, hey, if I get this done and it's successful, like 95% of the time it is, you can go in and figure out that I'm going to look better, I'm going to feel better, I'm going to have more self-confidence. Really, I didn't feel any pain throughout the entire process. And the recovery time, I've been doing the show every single day. I don't even wear a hat. And I'm not embarrassed by it because I know that in no time at all, I'm going to have that kind of hair that I had back in college and in my 20s. And I'm excited about it. You can be too. They have financing available as well. But if you're going to go anywhere or consider anything to be done with your hair, you got to go to Doc Linville because he knows what he's doing. He's the expert in his field, and he has the best people that do this procedure in the country working for him on a daily basis. Check him out. Go to 975hair.com.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Talking quarterback, Scott is in the hive with the Killer Bees. Scott, go ahead.
I am so glad that you are arguing the sentiment of fighting for a quarterback that might be from a big-name conference, but maybe not a big-name school, that took his school from the bottom straight to the top. And, guys, please forgive me if you argued this quarterback and I didn't hear you, but that, none better than Dak Prescott right now.
That's a great point.
I mean,
great
call. Give me a quarterback that's doing better than Dak Prescott from what he did at Mississippi State and now what he's doing in the league.
There isn't one. That's a perfect example, Scott. That's one that I overlooked whenever we were having that conversation. Matt Ryan can kind of be another one. Drew Brees, kind of another one at Purdue.
One.
Who am I missing?
Russell Wilson.
Russell Wilson.
At two different schools
that were P5 and maybe not the cream of the crop in that power conference, but then, you know, were able to take their program to another level. Like, Dak Prescott totally changed what Mississippi State was. Mississippi State was like a 4-win team. All of a sudden, he's winning 8-9 games there, mm-hmm. and somehow he slides to the middle of the draft. And look, he had a little bit of trouble before the NFL draft, too, that might have hurt his draft stock a little bit, but shouldn't, because the guy's playing at an elite level. That dude's a stud.
We're missing another one.
Who?
Arguably, not even arguably, if I said who's the best quarterback in the NFL right now.
Oh, you're talking about Stafford?
Nope.
Well, Matt Stafford's the best quarterback in the NFL.
Patrick Mahomes
at Texas Tech. Yeah.
They already anointed him to the Hall of Fame.
I said Stafford.
And he went to Texas Tech. You said Matt Stafford. So that's on you.
Yeah, that was my bad. Pat
hot
Mahomes.
Hot take guy, Del. And I'm the hot take guy. See, Matt Stafford.
I should have just overlooked it. Matt Stafford, though, the betting favorite to win the MVP, though, if you want to get too hot takey about it. The thing with Mahomes is, like, they didn't really win a ton of games there, though, right? Like, he didn't take that program to another level, but it is, like, a mediocre Power 5 school.
But he made a lot of people take notice. He
certainly. And was a first-round quarterback. We had a texter.
Mitch Trubisky. Oh, never mind.
Was Trubisky bad, or was he ruined by a Nagy?
There was not a big enough sample size for Trubisky.
I want to see him get another starting job just so we know who he is. Like,
you want to see that train wreck again?
Absolutely. It's entertainment. Why wouldn't I want to see that? A texter texting in, 713-780-3776. Any quarterbacks that you like now? I'm intrigued by Corral. I need
Me
to
too.
See more of his senior season. Malik Willis is another one from Liberty. I hate the competition that he's playing. I think he's incredibly talented. The competition level is something that really bothers me. And look, it bothered me a little bit with Zach Wilson, too. But I like Zach Wilson. Hasn't looked good so far through three games. Trey Lance, too. But we don't really know what Trey Lance is yet.
For the Niners to go out and give up that much to go get him, you got to believe they did enough due diligence with an offensive mind like Shanahan to know this guy can do some things.
I trust Shanahan. So I think that
Colin Kaepernick went to Nevada?
He went to Nevada. But quarterbacks that are currently in college that are projected first-rounders, like Malik Willis, he worries me because of the competition. He looks small, too. Like, he looks pretty small to me. But you have Kyler Murray that's playing and playing at a very strong level. He's smaller than Malik Willis. Carson Strong's another guy you see in the first round of mock drafts. I've seen him throw the football, and like, I haven't watched him play a ton of games, so I don't have a ton of tape on Carson Strong. But if you just YouTube Carson Strong highlights or whatever, he looks like Brock Osweiler throwing the football. Like, he throws it from his shoulder and just shot puts it.
That's not a good thing.
I don't like his throwing motion at all. Sam Howell, not a fan. Like,
I'm not either. And it was one thing to say just week one. I watched him play last year. I've watched him play this year. I'm not a Sam Howell guy at all. There's a guy that looked like at the start of the year that he was going to be a surefire first-round pick and be a multimillionaire. And now I think that people are going, whew. Thank goodness we didn't have to draft Sam Howell.
Yeah, I think Sam Howell's comp for me, to me it's Sam Darnold. I've heard other people call him like Baker Mayfield. I'm not sure he's quite at either one of those guys' level. I wouldn't waste a first rounder on Sam Howell.
Flimsy Cherry's got two good ones. I mean, one good one that leads me to another one, but Josh Allen is one.
That's not exactly my theory, though, because I said Power 5 conference, like a mediocre Power 5 conference school that elevates them in that conference.
But in terms of kind of putting more stock into Trey Lance... Yeah. You can go Carson Wentz,
Big Ben.
And you can go Josh Allen, and you can go even a Big Ben, sure, at Miami, Ohio.
This one's good from 8690, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Cal was not a juggernaut whenever Aaron Rodgers was there, and he elevated that program to another level. I think there's a ton of examples of this. It's a theory I really believe in.
Not, you know what? Sidebar here on what annoys me, besides you, Dell, is the fact that when they do the national TV intros and they get to say their school, why do we got to go and like crap on the schools that gave you the opportunity in part to be exposed to being a National Football League player, like even for Aaron Rodgers, why can't you say Cal? Why do you have to say Butte Community College because that's the first school you went to?
I don't
know. Or why do you guys skip on the major university that gave you a scholarship, that put you on TV on Saturdays, that had more people paying attention, and they got to say their high school, or they got to say this or that? That annoys me.
Is it a falling out maybe with the university? I don't know.
I think in certain cases that might be the case, but not for all the amount of guys that do it.
I think a lot of them, too, are just trying to be cool. I think a lot of them are trying to be different, trying to be cool, trying to get recognized a little bit whenever they say that. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Dusty Baker is pissing me off. I'm not going to even front about this.
Today or every day?
More so now than before, because it's like accumulation of things that I've seen from Dusty Baker. The Astros have one of the best teams in Major League Baseball. There's no doubt of that in my mind. They have one of the best rosters in the entire league. Their run differential is still one of the very best in all of baseball. Yet here we are, 4 days left in the regular season, and they haven't locked up the division. Like, that is bothersome to me. That disturbs me to no end. How does one of the best teams in all of baseball, with the best roster in all of baseball, one of the top two, top three rosters in the entire league, how are they in a situation where there's 4 days left in the regular season and they don't have a playoff spot locked up?
So you're basically putting it on Dusty Baker again.
Yeah, I think the sense of urgency bothers me, and here's something he said that really bothered me after the game yesterday.
The key is you're still on the cusp. You know what I mean? There's a whole bunch of people ain't on the cusp. And so, you got to play the game. I mean, nobody's going to give it to you. They're playing is tough. You know, we're playing tough. And tomorrow's another day, or we might even, wrap it up tonight if, Oakland wins, because they're due to win.
It bothers me. It bothers me saying, well, Oakland's due to win one. They'll get the job done for us. Tomorrow's another day. We have another opportunity tomorrow. These are tough games. We're still right there on the cusp. You have one of the best teams in baseball, and you haven't locked up the division with 4 games left to play. Like, the laissez-faire attitude with, aw, shucks, we'll get it done tomorrow, that bothers me. We're in the final week of the regular season. The playoffs start next week, and we're seeing no urgency at all from the skipper of the Houston Astros.
Welcome to my world. This is what I've been preaching. This is what I've been saying. Like, I'm good with just blowing off this whole week if you had a 6-game lead in the division, you wrapped up your playoff status, you knew exactly where you were going to be and who you were going to be playing, and you were in control of your destiny. But because all these things are left to question, it's easy to start questioning the guy that's making the decisions that have put you somewhat in limbo to this point. You have to also ask yourself the question, if you had a different manager, more analytical, would it have changed not just this last week? Would it have changed a lot more about how this team was managed for most of this season? And the things that you all know listening to us on a daily basis that are my hot buttons, like resting hot players, like screwing up the batting order when you don't have to, like winning all 3 games of a 3-game series and not being satisfied with winning the first two. Even from his pitching perspective and the guys that he likes to go to because of a hunch, because of a loyalty, because of a security blanket, as opposed to analytical going, hey, you know what? This guy's really struggled lately. Or against these matchups, this is not the guy to go to here. I would feel more comfortable, regardless of the result, than what I've seen and, like you said, now where we are.
Well, answer that question. Answer the question that you just asked.
Yes.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it, yes. Right? And that's why I've been saying for weeks, Dusty Baker cannot be your manager for the Astros next season. Final year of the deal. Don't let him come back. I beg you, Houston Astros, with Dusty Baker next season. 713-780-3776. Houston, how do you feel? How do you feel that the Astros have not locked up a playoff spot with 4 days left in the regular season with one of the best rosters in the entire league? 713-780-3776. Number to call, number to text. We're at Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. David Culley, Leslie Frazier. Did the Texans get it right with those two finalists? Also, the greatest Texans coach in history. We do it when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.